When it comes down to it, are you ready to make a tough decision and live with the consequences? Do you like to make the big calls or no? Well, the new book explores some of these questions by looking to sailors of the past. It's called To Risk It All: 9 Conflicts in the Crucible of Decision. The author is retired Admiral James Stavridis, former Supreme Allied Commander of NATO, who led American troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. Admiral, welcome back. It's good to talk to you.
Same here, Scott.
Your book has 9 case studies from conflict, and one of your observations is leaders are particularly tested in times of transition when the world is changing. And I want to ask you, is there something about this moment of change in the world that makes this book relevant?
I think so, and we need look no further than the tragedy unfolding in front of our eyes in Ukraine. Here we have 2 leaders, Vladimir Putin, a dark, reckless figure in my view, who has rolled the dice and has kind of risked it all in many ways. He's risked the status of his nation on the international scene. He's risked his military and damaged it deeply. He's risked his own personal legacy and place in history. On the other side of the line, you have Volodymyr Zelensky, who similarly risks it all, but does it for the right things. Zelensky looks over his shoulder and sees his wife, his children, his cities, his civilization, his armed forces, his nation under attack. So to those who would say, you know, this is not a moment of great change or great risk, I'd say, turn on the television.
Yeah. Well, one person you profile that I want to ask you first about is Rear Admiral David Farragut. Not only because I'm guessing I have gotten on and off the DC Metro at Farragut West about 5,000 times, but also because Farragut is known for the line, "Damn the torpedoes." He fought for the Union during the Civil War, and he sailed through an area filled with mines right after a Union warship hit a mine and exploded. So at first blush, it seems impulsive, kind of overcooked bravado, maybe. But what, in your view, is the real lesson in his story?
First and foremost, his is a story of personal bravery. He's literally up on the mast of his flagship, kind of leading this group of ships through Mobile Bay down in Alabama. And the torpedoes in the famous line are actually mines, what we think of today as sea mines. And you're absolutely correct, Scott. He watches one of his ships blow up literally in front of him. But he makes a decision to keep going. As you say, it appears reckless, but actually what's in the background of Farragut's mind is his knowledge that these mines have been in the water for months and months and months, if not years. He knows in the back of his mind, he has researched it, he's studied the problem, he's thought long and hard about it, and he's able, even in that moment of extreme stress, to bring that intellectual preparation, combine it with his personal courage, and make a decision that wins a pivotal battle. It's a pretty good example for us, I think.
Wow. And I guess I'm just thinking, was it Keynes who said, you know, when the facts change, I can change my mind, and Farragut has just seen a warship blow up. So some of the mines are still active here.
Indeed. And yet he is capable of bringing that level of calmness in the midst of crisis that I think is so important for all of us. You know, when you face a potentially risk-it-all kind of scenario, you don't have a lot of time to get out a yellow pad and start jotting down the pros and cons of what you're going to do. You just have to bring it together. And in that moment, the best decision makers, for them, time kind of slows down. And you can train to do that by preparing, by thinking ahead, by putting yourself in the simulator of another experience. And that's really the whole point of the book, To Risk It All. The idea is by reading these stories, you can think, what would I have done in Farragut's place? Or say John Paul Jones at the very beginning of the book, or more recently, the story of Captain Brett Crozier, the commanding officer of USS Theodore Roosevelt, facing an outbreak of COVID on his massive warship.
Let's talk about Brett Crozier. His story is from 2020, and how the Navy was dealing with COVID-19, which had, you know, we just heard about COVID-19. And you write about this one sailor who put the health of his crew over everything else, went public. Why include this story?
First and foremost, I acknowledge it's a pretty controversial story. And there are certainly those in the Navy who said, You know, Crozier should have known when he sent this famous email that some have called the red flare, you know, sending up a flare. He should have known it was going to go public. It was going to be embarrassing for the Navy because he points out a lot of failures on the part of the chain of command, his bosses, yeah. the admirals. And again, you've got to put yourself at where were we in the trajectory of the pandemic? We were at the very beginning. We couldn't even agree at that time whether it was good or bad to wear masks. But the thing Crozier knew was he had to socially distance his crew. You can't do that on a warship where 9 sailors live in a room the size of your kitchen. So he sent this email. He put the Navy on report. He paid the ultimate career price for it. He was fired by the Secretary of the Navy very publicly. Yeah. Yet I think he made the right decision for his crew. And I for one, think he walks away with his head held high. Mm.
It is not all commanders you're profiling in this book. You also write about Dory Miller, a black sailor in the segregated Navy of the 1940s. And he stayed on his ship when it was bombed at Pearl Harbor. Briefly, tell us the story and why it's in there.
This is a wonderful story. Dory Miller's a big guy. He's a championship boxer. He comes out of Texas in the 30s. No real jobs or opportunity available. He joins the Navy. Unfortunately, in the segregated, let's be honest, racist Navy of those days, he becomes a cook. He's essentially, he's shining shoes of the officers. He's cooking their meals, cleaning their staterooms. But on Pearl Harbor Day, as bombs are dropping and torpedoes are flying around that harbor and Japanese Zeros are machine gunning anything that moves, Dory Miller runs up to the bridge of the ship. He's trying to find his captain, to help his captain who's been grievously wounded. He helps him. Then he goes down a deck or so and finds an anti-aircraft gun. And he doesn't really know how to work it, but there's a couple of other sailors there with him. Together, they man this gun, and they shoot down at least one, perhaps two Japanese Zeros. He's never been on an aircraft gun like that before. Later, they asked him, how'd you know how to do that? And he said, you know, it's just like shooting ducks. You point the barrel where you think the duck is going to be. That's all I did. He won the Navy Cross, the second highest decoration of this nation. And here's the punchline to the whole story, Scott. The Navy just announced about a year or so ago, the next big 100,000-ton nuclear aircraft carrier, not going to be named for a president like many are. It's going to be named USS Dory Miller.
Wow. And what is the essential decision-making lesson of his story?
His story is one of pure personal courage. You know, and I kind of associate him with a real incident that just occurred just a few days ago in one of these horrific mass shootings. You see this marvelous Chinese-American doctor, Dr. Cheng, who launched himself at an armed mass shooter and tackled him, but was killed himself. But it enabled the other members of the congregation to subdue. So it's a moment of just pure personal courage. I wanted one story that was just that, and that's the story of Dory Miller.
Yeah. You know, reading these examples, and I've been kind of chatting with our producer, Chris Bentley, and we get the sense that you may not have a single mold for how leaders should act, that one attribute seems to be adaptability. So, you know, what should we regular people who make big decisions about our health or financial stress, relationships, parenting, jobs, what should the rest of us take away about leadership and decision-making?
You put your finger on the point of the whole book. At the end of the book, I draw on these 9 stories and lay out a variety of things, some of which we've touched on in the course of our conversation. But I'll draw a line under 2 of them. You mentioned one already. It's the ability to change your mind. In other words, so often in a moment of crisis, people lock into a certain course of action. You've got to be flexible. You've got to be able to, as you just said, to adapt. Think of Dr. Cheng is a pretty good story in that regard. And the second one is you've got to consider the broad range of outcomes. And that sounds so obvious, But too often, people bias either to the negative or to the positive. You've got to quickly fan that deck of cards of possible outcomes in your mind and be cognizant of the risk you're taking. My hope is that reading the book will help all of us make better decisions in our lives.
That's retired Admiral James Stavridis, Managing Director of the Carlyle Group, and his new book is To Risk It All. Admiral, thanks so much. Great to talk to you once again.
My pleasure, Scott. Always great to talk to you.
And we have an excerpt of To Risk It All at hereandnow.org.